Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Fame is a fickle mistress, they say. At one point, you can be among the leaders of a whole wave in popular music, with the whole world dancing to your beat to the point that you even play at the Super Bowl. But before you know it, those days are gone, and the wave you were riding fades out, making any attempt to reclaim that old spotlight feel forced and maybe even a little sad. And depending on who you brought along this journey, you might even lose a connection to someone that was once special to you, causing rifts in families that can never be healed. But before the story of how it all fell apart, it's time to venture back to the story of an uncle and their nephew who set out to become stars. Before there was Redfoo and Sky Blue, there was just Stefan and Skylar. Since there was an 11-year age gap between them, Stefan had already started trying to break into the music industry. Redfoo was part of a rap duo called RFDK with rapper Drake Rune, and they got a bit of a buzz on the local scene in the late 90s. At one point, he even claimed he crossed paths with a young Eminem, and tried to help him land a deal before M linked up with Aftermath.
And he actually opened up for us at the Hollywood Athletic Club. And
Eminem opened for you?
Yeah, when he had just got signed with Dre and he was doing his Hi, My Name Was, and we were, you know, local band, and they were asking me, what do you think? It was Loud Records.
Yep.
And they were like, should we sign him? And I just remember saying, that's the best unsigned rapper that I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
But that group amounted to basically nothing, with their first and only album selling only 44 copies. Left without focus, Redfoo tried to regroup. But one thing was clear, he was intent on fame.
Doing my best to just get to the top. That's my new thing right now, and I'm doing some stand-up comedy. I'm doing some music, I'm doing some rapping. I'm trying to just build myself and become the star. I always used to try to build other people, but now I'm just directing all that stuff to me.
And while he was just throwing things at the wall to attempt to see what might stick, some early signs of the character he'd portray in his music were visible.
Growing up here, what's your favorite thing about Los Angeles?
The women. And then they have the asses and then the tees. It's amazing. White girl, I mean, just big, this ass like two little kids like boxing, just fighting, and I like to watch the fight.
Over time, Redfoo, who had some production credits on records from Black Eyed Peas, after going to high school with Will.i.am, noted the potential of his young nephew, Sky Blue. And while it seems coincidental that both of them had aspirations of making it in music, there was grounds for their family to kill it in the industry. After all, Redfoo's father was literally at the helm of one of the most influential record labels of all time.
So my dad is the founder of Motown. Motown Records.
Motown's record.
Yeah, Barry Gordy.
Temptations.
Temptations.
The Jackson 5.
Jackson 5.
Yeah. All that, yeah.
Wonder. Stevie Wonder. Yeah. Stevie Wonder.
Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Gladys Knight and the Pips. Thought it was the Pimps, but it was the Pips the whole time.
However, it wasn't necessarily the boost in the game that you'd imagine being blood relatives of musical royalty would be. As for one thing, the leader of the Gordy family actively didn't want them to delve into that world.
They, the family usually pushed us away from music because, they said the business wasn't like it used to be, or, it wasn't for people. They didn't want us to be in the music industry.
Really?
Yeah, they wanted us to be like lawyers, go to college. I dropped out of high school. I don't even have a GED. I think Fu got a GED, but he dropped out too. We're the black sheep of the family, kind of, did our own thing, expressed ourselves and were funny and class clowns. He always inspired us with wisdom, but he never told us to do music, And so when he started seeing us being successful, and he was like, wow, you gotta follow your heart. And so then he understood that we really were about this music.
But in spite of Barry's reservations, they forged ahead. And even though it seems that they didn't rely on it the way you'd envision, it still means that people were claiming they were industry plants before that term even came to prominence. I'm so much more inclined to support artists that have musical and songwriting skills that fought their way into the industry, as opposed to artists with day one industry connections whose only real talent is branding themselves and social media presence. And while that may seem like a harsh assessment of a crew who had a unique look and approach to pop music, there are reasons to believe that the music was made with maximizing their marketing potential in mind. Reflecting on the glory days of LMFAO with his nephew, Redfoo has admitted that the ethos behind the group that he and Sky Blue once planned to call Sexy Dudes was to take him out of the underground and finally bask in mainstream success. In fact, it was a conscious exercise in selling out.
I did hip hop and I was doing stuff and I didn't care about money. It was all about the art.
Yeah.
And I did that.
Yeah.
But this time, LMFAO, it was like, I wanted to understand what it was like to be famous. Mm-hmm. Like I had done my artsy stuff. I want to use the tools that I have of making music, producing music. And I was like, it's time now. I'm 30 something when we started that. It's time to make it. I wanted to experience what it was like to become a millionaire. I mean, this is like real shit, right?
Yeah.
As they set out on the LA electronic scene, Redfoo and Sky Blue were intent on faking it till they made it by following the teachings of The Secret, also known as the Law of Attraction.
Yes is the song that we made to make sure that we were gonna be on the right path. That's The Secret really inspired. Didn't inspire this thing, but we used The Secret, the technology, the psychological technology of The Secret to get everything that we wanted.
Reportedly, this practice took up much of their time, with Redfoo using it as a way to enact his goals before he ever reached them.
We use dreaming as a tool to get what we want in our life. Everybody dreams, but we use dreaming. For instance, we'll sit and just imagine what we want. It's so fun, and then we're living our dreams.
But that wasn't all it took to achieve success. Instead, they had to get themselves on the radar of the major labels, and that happened when will.i.am's backup dancer told A&R Neil Jacobson about the group. After checking them out, he set up a meeting with Interscope's Jimmy Iovine, and suddenly, they were signed to a recording contract between will.i.am's own imprint and one of the leading companies in the game.
With LMFAO, there's no credit to be taken. These guys are brilliant. Sky and Redfoo had such a clear, defined understanding of who they were, what they were trying to do. They had gotten the ball rolling. It was starting to move a little bit.
Despite Neil's suggestion that they had a clear sense of their authentic selves, one of the lesser-known things about their breakout track, I'm in Miami, Bitch, is that when it dropped, they hadn't even been there. Instead, they basically did market research to fill in the gaps.
We wrote I'm in Miami, Bitch before we had ever been to Miami. Because as all people do before they go to their fantasy vacation, they look it up. They go on Google and they search. They look, you know, we were looking at past spring breaks and we were interviewing everybody. You know, what's, so yeah, and we saw this stuff and we wrote a song from that. It was what we wanted.
Still, with their wild afros and exuberant clothing, the image of Red and Sky as these partying court jesters was established. And soon, it was about to pay off dividends. But that golden era could only last for a brief window of time before the wheels completely fell off. After early tracks like Yes, I'm in Miami, and Shots with Lil Jon went golden platinum, their debut album Party Rock firmly established what the gimmick was and why people gravitated to it. However, this was all just a proof of concept for what was to come with their next project, Sorry for Party Rockin'. Where their previous record put them on the fringes of the mainstream, their 2011 album spawned two number one singles, alongside music videos which literally pulled in billions of views on this platform. Alongside Sexy and I Know It, Party Rock Anthem became the true cornerstone of their sound, and it basically launched a whole movement behind shufflin'. However, not everyone was on board. For starters, the music was critically panned, getting almost exclusively poor reviews from those who felt that the joke wore thin pretty quickly for them, but it likely wasn't for them, as Red knew that he wanted to make something for the masses, not for music lovers. And when that success came, they basked in it.
It always warms my heart to know that, you know, the parents don't hate me. I think these songs, the whole LMFAO movement, was like the first time that the parents and the kids liked the song, both had a favorite song, you know.
After years of striving towards fame, Redfoo and Sky were living the life on tour while receiving a number one single. Meanwhile, their stranglehold and influence on culture was undeniable, making them inescapable whether you were on board with their whole shtick or not. I would really not call myself a fan of LMFAO, but I can recite every one of their hits. Just goes to show how famous they are. You almost couldn't do anything without hearing one of their songs. Party Rock Anthem was the most overplayed song ever, and I'm not joking. Anyone who can take themselves back to 2011 knows how impossible it was to escape that song. The only other close contenders for the most overplayed song since then was I Have a Feeling by Black Eyed Peas or Shape of You by Ed Sheeran. But before they knew it, a moment that seemed to be a crowning achievement in their career would prove to be the stage where it all started to slip away from them. In February of 2012, LMFAO were culturally relevant enough that they found themselves performing at the Super Bowl halftime show. With Madonna looking to hop onto what kids were into, they got a little time during the set to perform their two biggest hits, Sexy and I Know It and Party Rock Anthem. It was all going so well, with the crowd embracing their trademark energy the duo was known for. But amid all of the fun they were having on stage, Sky Blue was fighting a hidden battle with his own body. They called me to do the Super Bowl, and I said, I'll do it, but I have to lay on my back the whole time unless we're practicing, he later revealed. I never did one full rehearsal. The only one I did full out was at the Super Bowl, and I slipped my disc out during it. So right when they lowered us through the stage and my part was over, they had to carry me into darkness and work on me in the back. I didn't get to see the rest of the show. Although he claimed that he wouldn't change a thing, the issues with Sky's back problems not only overshadowed what should have been a high point for the group, but was truly the beginning of the end. In the wake of the injury, Sky was suddenly absent from tour dates, with a statement from Live Nation claiming that, despite attending specialized therapy sessions over the past month, Sky's physician concluded that the herniated discs were still too damaged to allow him to perform and any physical activity for more than 2 minutes at a time, as it could lead to major setbacks and negate any progress in his recovery. Meanwhile, Redfoo kept pushing on, while Sky recuperated from his back injury. He even made light of it on stage.
Now my partner, Scott Blue, couldn't make it here tonight. He hurt his back in a very serious wiggling accident. He was wiggling and his penis fell out on the floor and he stepped on it and tripped and hurt his shit.
However, where this initially seemed like one of them holding down the fort to ensure there was something to come back to, Sky later explained what really happened at that point.
During the Super Bowl, my disc slipped when I was performing. And so as soon as I went down that little elevator, I collapsed and I couldn't even watch the rest of the show or anything. I had a doctor working on me right away and all that.
And with the benefit of hindsight, he realized that this was when the group began to dissolve.
Was food there for you during that time period, during your healing process?
No. No, he's doing his thing. You know what I mean? He was really focused on what he needed to do. You know?
I mean, but he called you though, right?
Like you know, after my back went out, you know, I didn't speak to food for a year. Me and Foo didn't talk for a year. Nothing. You know, it's okay, though, because the truth is he was focused on what he had to do. I ain't mad at him. Let him get his thing, you know.
Yeah.
But my back went out on a show, and before a show, and then the tour kept going, and then I just had to go home. And, you know, and everybody kept doing the Party Rock and kept doing the LMFAO without.
After Sky was no longer able to tour, he was essentially hung out dry from a financial standpoint. And while he did attempt to shoot his uncle for some bail, it was clear that he felt he'd been swallowed by the mentality of the corporate machine. A point of conflict between the two, which would crop back later down the line.
Did you still get paid, though?
I wish.
So you got kicked out the group because your back went out.
I mean, pretty, you know, not out, yeah. You know, look, this is the thing. We're family. I love Foo. You know, he's a great dude. He is one of my biggest teachers in this music game.
Yeah.
I'm so thankful for him and everything he's done. But, you know, really, it's the big machine, you know, Interscope and all these labels that take creators and they just put them out there for money. Money is the most important thing.
But bear in mind, all of this information came out years after we knew that LMFAO had disbanded. Because when rumors of a dispute began to surface, they initially downplayed it. It's completely false. We're family at the end of the day. Blood is stronger than anything. Sky might be doing a DJ set in South America, and I might be in Vegas. And they'll say, oh, they're separate doing things. How can we make a story out of that? Said Redfoo. We have to be smart enough to recognize it's all a game, keep executing our vision, and turn this world into a party planet. And as Sky Blue recovered, Redfoo said he was relieved to have him back. Looking to my right, seeing my player partner right there is such a great feeling. But unfortunately for fans who wanted to keep party rocking, it didn't take long for the rhetoric to change. First of all, we're not breaking up. I know that for sure. We're family and stuff. So it's always love. I feel like we've been doing this for so long, 5 or 6 years. And we're kind of like saying, well, let's just do what's natural and just kind of explore that instead of like forcing it all the time. We've been working as LMFAO for so long. And you know, we've been working on a lot of other projects as well, replied Sky Blue. We need to kind of realize these projects we've been working on and it'll free up our minds and stuff to be able to take on another LMFAO project because the next one we do has to be amazing and crazy. It's kind of like, let's get our wind up. And then we come together stronger than ever. And as they went their separate ways, Redfoo echoed his nephew's sentiments.
He got into the business. He got into some stuff and said, well, hey, I kind of want to do this and I want to do that. And, you know, we had different ideas. And then so it was like, well, I'm just going to go do my thing. And then, okay, then I'm going to go do my thing.
But not only would that supposed comeback record never emerge, but the personal relationships between them would sour to the point of despair. While at the same time, the bottom fell out of both of their careers. Although they had gone their separate ways, it turned out that disbanding couldn't bring an end to the drama surrounding the crew. Because in the years following their breakup, everything they were doing had a shadow casted over it due to extensive litigation with their former manager. In 2014, LMFAO were sued for $7 million through a firm run by Renee McLean. According to him, his former clients thanked their managers who took them from 0 to 60 by throwing them under the tour bus, i.e. firing them. Instead of hiring new managers, LMFAO then poached two employees of the original managers, hiring them on salary instead of paying a commission to the original managers. As the dispute raged on, most of the battle came down to defining whether producing a remix for another artist would require the same kind of compensation that their management would usually be entitled to for brokering deals. In their own attorney's estimation, McLean's lawyers have found the only expert in the world who has ever called a producing agreement or a mixing agreement a recording agreement. The expert has said basically that any agreement for any step in the process of completing and delivering a finished recording to the record label is a recording agreement, which I suppose would include the guy who sweeps the studio, brings coffee, cleans the studio, sets up the microphones, etc. He is undaunted by the fact that mixing is not even part of the recording process and is done after all the actual recording has been completed. Sure enough, that was resolved when the court found in their favor. But their legal woes weren't exactly over, as they would soon find themselves facing a legal battle with Rick Ross for good measure over apparent copyright infringement. The use of Hustlin' in Party Rock Anthem is steadily apparent. Despite the slight change from Every Day I'm Hustlin' to Every Day I'm Shufflin', constitutes the creation of an unauthorized derivative work. Said Rosé's lawsuit, it also stated that the lyric was performed in a manner to sound like Rick Ross, and is described as an obvious attempt to capitalize on the fame and success of Hustlin'. But this time around, Redfoo wasn't worried, and actually tried to deter Rosé from carrying it through.
Quick question, you think you're going to be victorious because it's Every Day I'm Shufflin'?
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? You think you might have a victory?
Whatever I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Whatever I do,
okay.
I'll be victorious either way. Yeah, let's go.
Okay.
Whatever I do, I win. And I recommend that you don't want to go in. You don't want to go in with food. I win.
Okay.
In the end, he was right to be so calm about the whole thing, as the case was thrown out by the judge. The question presented, however, is not whether the lyrics of Hustlin' as arranged in their entirety are subject to copyright protection, she declared. The question is whether the use of a three-word phrase appearing in the musical composition, divorced from any accompanying music, modified, and subsequently printed on merchandise, constitutes an infringement of the musical composition Hustlin'. The answer, quite simply, is that it does not. She also added, the average observer would not confuse t-shirts bearing the phrase Every Day I'm Shufflin' with the musical composition Hustlin', nor without reference to the Party Rock anthem in Hustlin'. Once the legal drama was out of the way, Redfoo said that both he and Sky were pushing forward towards their separate goals.
Are you gonna put out a...
Well, you know, right now we're just, you know, solo, we don't know.
But he didn't reveal that there was any hint of bad blood between them. As the more notable face out of the two, Redfoo went on to host X Factor Australia and even scored a couple of platinum singles on that side of the world with Let's Get Ridiculous and New Thing. However, that success didn't exactly translate to the States, even though Redfoo himself felt that he was established enough that he wasn't starting from scratch again.
First, it was just getting in the game, just being noticed. Now it's continuing to represent, you know, who you are, staying focused and saying, this is what has got me here, doing more of the same stuff that has got me up to this level.
And even when he was promoting new work, he claimed the door wasn't shut to an LMFAO reunion.
Will there be a reunion anytime soon?
I think in the future, for sure, we're going to come back together.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have our solo careers, you know, behind us and our songs, and we'll come back, do the LMFAO hits, do our solo stuff, and keep the party rocking.
Sky Blue felt the same way. Persevering with his own thing while never completely destroying the hopes that some fans had to see them don the glasses once more.
This I wasn't aware of. You guys split up.
Yeah. Well, no, we didn't split up. Basically, it's a hiatus.
Oh, so there's no bad blood?
Nah, ain't
no. Oh, okay, okay. I thought maybe it ended on bad terms.
He's living in Australia right now because he's part of the X Factor out there. He just released his solo first single, but I think he's just got a new album coming out.
So y'all both doing solos.
But soon, both men would be wishing that they'd kept LMFAO afloat by any means necessary. Released in 2016, Redfoo's solo album Party Rock Mansion only sold 144 copies in Australia, a nation that had previously taken everything they had to offer with glee. And if that wasn't hard enough for him to hear, the project's release prompted an expose by Sky Blue, who lifted the lid on everything in a lengthy Facebook. I've been wanting to speak my truth about this whole LMFA situation for a long time. Out of respect to our family, I kept it all to myself. I woke up this morning excited to plan the release of my album that had been 2 years in the making, but then I got a call from my lawyer telling me that you own all of my LMFAO royalties. Different things like this would go on all the time, when you know we are 50-50 across the board. The way you belittle people in your crazy power trips was some of the main reasons our relationship as family and partnership has greatly suffered. From there, he took aim at his uncle, proclaiming that his refusal to evolve from his early days was basically embarrassing, while also making it clear that he still had some bad blood over what went down when he was out of action. I'm sure you know that I have been trying to get this money released that was held up from the Rick Ross lawsuit. Unlike you, I didn't take the LMFAO brand for myself. Your whole vibe and style since our last show together is completely a half-assed version of LMFAO. My back went out right before a big arena show. You went out and performed, but then just left to the tour bus without me. In fact, you didn't speak to me after that for about a year, which is around the time that you announced our hiatus. As someone who really cared, loved, and had your back, this really hurt. I mean, you're my uncle, my blood. You even kept touring as LMFAO and made a lot of money doing it. You never once called me to ask how I was recovering. You just kept shuffling every day without me. I really loved you. I looked up to you, man. But the more successful we got, the more you wanted control. While I was hurting you, and some people at Interscope tried and kind of succeeded to put a huge stadium tour and cut me out of it as much as you possibly could while still using the LMFAO brand. This is crazy. Something we built together. After a while, you took for yourself. Not willing to let up, he then went deeper into his character flaws, as well as suggesting the failure of his solo album had sunk any possibility of them ever reuniting. Your last album is called Party Rock Mansion. The only two LMFAO albums were called Party Rock and Sorry for Party Rocking. Even if we wanted to come back, you severely damaged the brand, especially with your last album. You tried to sell happiness, but you're not a happy person. No matter how hard you try, LMFAO will never be the same without me. So therefore, it will never be the same. I couldn't stand how you disrespect people. I was gonna let it all go, but still you fucking with me and my livelihood. Even though you already took so much from me, it's still not enough. Well, shit stops here, Stefan. I just wanted to make music from a real place, not the 13-25 female demographic, or whatever other statistics you and the label obsess over. With their audience left in shock, you would think that maybe a rant like that might galvanize public support behind Sky Blue. But his own solo endeavors never took off as planned. Where Fu tried to replicate the past, Sky initially claimed he didn't want to be pigeonholed like his uncle.
So Interscope, you feel like the machine was pushing him to continue to do what he was doing if he wanted to continue to live with that kind of life, right?
Absolutely. I think they were definitely pressuring him to say, yo, the brand is going to suffer. Y'all the biggest in the world. But if y'all take a hiatus now, or if y'all stop now, you know, so he continued touring and doing what he had to do to support the brand and things like that. But, you know, in doing that, that definitely even furthered me a little back because, I'm not like the big Afro cat, you know, and I'm not wearing all this stuff. You see in Party Rock Anthem, I have glasses in my, I have like black glasses in.
Yeah.
Because I was like, look, I'm not going to be just this. I know that I'm something, you know what I'm saying, within myself.
But when it was evident that people didn't want to hear the Party Rock Anthem guy try to spit from the heart, he tried to lean back into the gimmick, but that never worked either. In fact, his attempts to build a whole lore around the party president gimmick fell totally flat.
Well, tell me about the ratings, man.
You know, basically, man, they're here to make sure things don't get out of control unless we want them to get out of control. You know what I'm saying? They just chilling right. Oh, wait.
Uh-oh, they got an air plug on. Okay.
Let's gotta make sure we good. Party president, baby.
And with that, both men have been non-entities in the music industry ever since. This meant that their careers are defined by an illustrious 3 years before a fall off like few have seen before or since. Ultimately, what went wrong with LMFAO is that it simply wasn't built to last. Even if you place their personal issues aside, the group's success was defined by viral hits, rather than solid albums or music that people had any true affection for. And with hindsight, it's clear to see that was the case. Part of the problem is that a lot of people liked their music ironically. Everyone knew it was over the top and kind of a joke. Fast forward to the present day, and Foo is still making money off the brand via merch. And if we know anything about how he rolled from a business sense, you can bet that as for Sky Blue, he attempted to relaunch under the name Fuck Yeah, dropping an album known as Chaos to Consciousness. All the while, fans are clamoring for their return, still waiting on this reunion. Hopefully the income goes 50-50 this time. I miss them. But it's fair to say that anyone who is waiting for their reconciliation shouldn't hold their breath. While Sky Blue has basically fallen off the map, Red Foo is traveling the globe and honing his tennis skills. And at nearly 50 years old, he decided to turn pro. Although his win record isn't too impressive thus far, to say the least. So it's safe to say that we shouldn't expect him to win Wimbledon anytime soon. For those who lived through that era, those tracks will always be a moment in time where LMFAO conquered the world. And for future generations, the biggest question is likely going to be how it ever happened in the first place. They came, they went, they party rocked, but they were never going to have the staying power that they hoped, especially when the business end of things was sure to result in the group imploding. But hey, it was fun while it lasted, right?